Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics. Welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Fred Schenkelberg.
And this is Carl Carlson.
Hey, Carl, we had a question came in about a week or so ago, and I did get a chance to talk to Kirk about it, and it was related to a question about setting up and analyzing some test data that was running at different cycle speeds. And you know, sometimes the questions we get on stuff like this is pretty vague, which I understand. We didn't want it. We didn't have an NDA in place, and it was, but basically it was, I got three test jigs that were assembled various ways, and it's cycling our product, but they're running at different rates. How do I combine this information? And so what would be your first question back to a person that asked that kind of question?
Well, naturally, whenever there's a question of how something can fail or what your objectives are in testing, I always think about the first thing that comes to mind is what's the mechanism of failure?
Yeah.
And what's the underlying mechanism of failure? Because if you know that, then you know what path to walk.
Right. So Kirk and I talked about, you know, the specific question, and we came to the exact same conclusion, is you need to understand what's the mechanism at play here. Is it related to cycles or the speed of cycles, or is that matter at all, or is it just hours on the system that it's powered up? Is that what you're really going after? There's so many unknowns in the way the question was posed, but and anyway, I went back and forth with this person a few times on email, and I think I got a better handle of it eventually, but the first question was, you need to understand the failure mechanism, which brought up in my mind what I wanted to talk to you about, Carl, is if we almost always jump to, well, what's the failure mechanism? And we use that knowledge in FMEAs and root cause analysis, in designed guidelines, we do it in test designs, we do it in interpreting failure or field failures. We look at it when we consider how a customer is going to use our product and what environment it is, and how would that affect different failure mechanisms. But who needs to know that knowledge? And then to what degree? Is it good enough to know that if I put bare metal out, it's going to rust? Or do I need to understand the chemical process of the 57 different rust products based on our alloy? You know, and then who needs to know that?
That's a great question. What comes to mind for me, and there's no simple answer to this because it's going to depend on some things, but let's talk about what it depends on. If you're in a reliability organization that focuses on design for reliability, then that pendulum is going to swing more towards you as a reliability engineer, that you need to understand the mechanisms of failure well enough to know how to influence the design for reliability.
And so well, I think there's a problem with that one though, Carl, because then you're the bad news bearer. Well, your design sucks, is going to fail this way, and this way, because here's these mechanisms. And if you're the only one bringing in, this is how it fails, you're doomed. I've seen that happen.
Okay, well, that's fair. That's a fair statement. And so really the entire organization, the design team, and if they're well-educated, well-trained, they will understand the different mechanisms of failure. And so now let's assume that is the case. Let's say you're in an organization that is staffed up with
above average designers.
Yeah.
They're all from Minnesota, you know.
And so now in that organization, if you're going to be a proactive and valuable reliability resource, then you need to talk the language of how things fail. Mm-hmm. And so that you can then guide how we're going to achieve reliability. If you're not aware of that, then you're going to end up in reliability. I don't want to use this pejoratively, but you're going to end up focusing on statistics rather than a design for reliability. Mm-hmm. And really, I think both are very, very important.
Well, there's a, there's a part that I think needs to be within the culture of an organization. One of them is that every failure, a prototype, auto box from a supplier, or a production line, field failure, all of those failures are gold. They contain clues as to what's the mechanism, and then you can do something about it. If that falls just on the failure analyst at the end of the day, and they create beautiful charts and graphs, but nobody looks at them, I think we miss the point of why we need to know about failure mechanisms. So I look at it as the reliability role is to be that, be sensitive to what technology we're using, what's the use we're using, where are the weaknesses. But I think more importantly, and this is just my opinion, is a catalyst for the rest of the organization to have those conversations. Because a mechanical engineer that really knows the metals and materials and the interactions and how that design is loading that system and how it's processed and manufactured is beyond what I'm ever going to get to in my knowledge. And same with electronics guys, and same with people that work deep with suppliers. It's extracting that knowledge from them in a safe way to talk about, well, how could it fail?
Yeah, let's back up a little bit, because some of our listeners may be very familiar with this subject and some may not. So I just want to take a second and go to a definition of failure mechanism. And I'll just do this from memory here. It's the underlying physics of how something fails, the underlying process, like chemical process, physical process, or thermodynamic process, or electrical process, mm-hmm. of what brings about a failure. At a system level, it can be the sequence of events that bring about the propagation. And so I want to explain that. And I also want to explain that there's different categories. And this is in part will help answer your question, Fred, which is you can have different categories of failure. For example, elastic, plastic, rupture, you can have corrosion, you can have fatigue. There's different types of mechanisms. And the reason I bring that up is because some people think of failure as something like, for instance, an axle breaks.
Right.
Yes, but what's the underlying process?
Right. Is it fatigue or brittle, or was it a
corrosion?
Yeah. What precipitated it is one way I've often thought of it.
Yeah.
And I worked with a really smart guy when I was at HP, and he often thought, and it was part of the FMEA discussions too, he often thought, or the root cause analysis also, is that there's the underlying mechanism, like corrosion, right? And so if we're seeing this corrosion that's occurring and it shouldn't be occurring, it's, well, what's the human part of this? Where did we make a decision to use that coding or to use that process? Where was the decision that enabled that process, the physical process, to occur? He always went back to where did we make a mistake, or were we unaware of the right bit of information so we could have avoided it? And I thought that was an interesting way to look at it, because it's not just, yeah, corrosion happens and, you know, we got to deal with it. But sometimes, if the right person knew about that failure mechanism at the right time, they would have chose a different material or different process.
Okay, that's very good. And so there's the technical root cause, mm-hmm. which might be the corrosion leading to this and what have you. Then there's the human input to that, or relationship to that, which would be, how did that occur? What process was missed? What level of training was missed? What reviews were missed, mm-hmm. that allow this to happen? And all those can be part of the root cause description. So what you're saying is we don't want to just focus only on that technical mechanism. We also want to ask, how did this happen?
Right. And so I think there's about 20 different things I'm thinking about. So I'll narrow it down, is that part of it is that the failure mechanisms, one of the philosophies I grew up with in my career was that in any given design, there's a finite number of failure mechanisms at play. that are, mm-hmm. you know, and it's a long list. I mean, if you doing an FMEA, you realize there's lots and lots of ways this thing can fail. And the underlying phenomena that occur. And so part of it is this chicken and egg type dilemma is if you're not aware that corrosion, anytime you have metals, and especially if, let's say you just have, you have two dissimilar metals. If you don't at least think through that, dissimilar metals, that creates a kind of corrosion. Let me look up that chart to see if, are we using the right materials that are close enough that it minimizes that type of corrosion. But if that knowledge isn't present in the organization and the process doesn't allow you to say, I remember reading something or saw something at a conference about dissimilar metals and we're doing bronze and steel here. Is that okay or not? I think it's that little seed of permission to go, hey, I need to go check that out.
I like the way you're describing that because it's one thing to have the knowledge. It's the other thing to have the permission, like you state.
Right.
And that's really critical because I've seen teams where the culture is very open to somebody who may not be an expert in the topic, but they may say, you know, I've read somewhere, and then that opens up a string that people are pulling on and or a thread, you know, that to use the clothing analogy.
Well, and if the worst that happens is the person that asks the naive question gets a quick education and an insight or maybe a reference to go brush up on. Or they go, oh, wait a sec, we hadn't thought of that. We're so close to this. We're such experts that we forgot that it even can occur. Thanks for bringing it up. And it could go either way.
It could go either way. And we need to work towards the type of culture that makes that acceptable and permissible and even
encouraged.
Encouraged, exactly.
Yeah. Well, the opposite of that, though, as opposed to just ship it, you know, don't bring up any problems. We're planning for success. Right. Well,
people get offended.
Yeah.
You know, they go, what are you talking about? You know, I've already taken that into account, and they kind of put down the person.
Yeah. And they never mention anything again. And
exactly. Exactly. So, yeah, it's both the knowledge and the willingness, which is also the permission to speak up about it. And so going back then, let me reflect on this with you, Fred, as to the who, what level of knowledge is needed for a given reliability engineer. Sometimes reliability engineers can focus on different types of technology. Mm-hmm. And that has worked best for me in my past when I've run reliability organizations, is to say, okay, here's an electrical reliability engineer, here's a chassis reliability engineer or a device, a hardware for this type of application. That works very well because then you can specialize in certain failure mechanisms. Mm-hmm.
Well, where I've seen that work really well is you get the specialist, but when you regularly get together saying, you know, here's the types of things we're seeing and their interactions. So because corrosion doesn't happen in isolation, for example, right? It's interacting with all these other pieces of the system. And so by being too specialized, you're going to miss those electromigration type things, or you're going to miss the types of things that only occur. Electromigration, I'm thinking of, is because it's electrical, but it's also the types of metals and it's the process you use to build this stuff and current density. So software and electrical design get into it. So by regularly communicating, and this one that I love the most is I was in a group that had the various people specialize in things. But we regularly talked about, here's, you know, my top five failure mechanisms this week or things to know about polymer degradation. And we'd have a quick little 5-10 minute seminar on what are these cool failure mechanisms. So I got to learn hundreds and hundreds of different ways things fail. And all it did was raise the awareness across the group of all the ways things can fail.
Yeah, so let's stipulate, and I agree with you, that you don't want to be too specialized. And so a general knowledge of all the different failure mechanisms, it's not infinite, but you can get better and better at it. Mm-hmm. And a general knowledge about the length and breadth of failure mechanisms is a good thing to have for a reliability engineer, even if, you know, you're focused on a chassis application or a certain type of device. it's good to have the general knowledge of the other failure mechanisms that may not be part of that given day as a general.
My own experiences, I took a deep dive for years into solder joint reliability. And I knew all kinds of stuff about tin lead solder and sack solders and a variety of other solders and how to evaluate and what was going on a molecular level and crystalline level. And it just, and then we get a product back from the field and it had a big corrosion, this white powder corrosion on the circuit board going on. Well, that's not the solder joint. Now what do I do? No, then it was asking the right questions and following up on it and learning about ions like chlorines and bromines and various salts that are on our hands that if you don't handle the circuit board correctly, you can create this initiating site for these kinds of corrosions. And
like you, Fred, when I managed reliability groups, I would have as part of the regular staff meeting, I'm talking the boring staff meetings where you're talking about
this budget
and that. I would include a 10-minute or 5-minute or 15-minute presentation on certain failure mechanisms. And I would assign those for the next week to different people in the reliability group. Go research cavitation corrosion or something.
Impeller fans.
They go, oh my God, how am I going to do that? Yeah. And then after about a year, everybody's knowledge, I mean, it's certainly before then, but it's a long-term process. Everybody's knowledge went up a lot.
Well, we did that at HP. We did it as it was a routine webinar series we did. And the most popular by far is when I invited one of the failure analysis team leads for the company. It was like the central FA lab that he had the gazillion dollar equipment type stuff. And he was the kind of guy you'd FedEx a circuit board to him. And by 10 o'clock in the next morning, you had pictures of, and descriptions of how this happened most of the time. But he would kind of do a summary. Here's what I've seen over the year. I've done, X gazillion FAs. Our lab has processed all this stuff. Here's the top 10 we saw. And here's how you can prevent them. And that had, it capped out our capability. We had like 1,000 people in that easy across from all over the world from within HP. And it indicated to me early in my career that there's a thirst for understanding failure mechanisms and having cool pictures from exotic failure analysis equipment doesn't hurt. But just talking about it in the staff meeting, it raises the awareness of your team, and then they can spread that knowledge going, hey, wait a second, what you're doing there is, that's probably going to lead to this issue here. We should at least investigate it, or what were the considerations? What's the trade-offs? Why are you forced into this situation? And here's the risk that we're facing.
Anybody can encourage or can influence their management to set up such a webinar series. Mm-hmm. If you want to go beyond the buzzword of design for reliability, this is one of the ways you do it.
Yep.
Is get involved in spreading the knowledge about underlying failure mechanisms to your team, to the whole management structure if needed. Yep. In teaching webinar series. I'll also say this: I think every reliability engineer should have an overview knowledge of all the different failure mechanisms, and then a deep knowledge of maybe a few of them.
Yeah, and the ones that are salient for your product, your technology, that's where you add a lot of value with the deep knowledge in that. Becoming a solder joint expert when you're doing welded bicycle frames is probably not going to serve you well. Although they have similar mechanisms.
But not on that one.
Yeah. Well, they might have, metal fatigue is common in metal. When you put it under strain. But anyway, the idea is that I agree with you, Carl. And I know we've talked about it a couple of times is should we do a series of webinars on specific failure mechanisms? I think that's more suited to like a video type system. Maybe the webinar series that we do would be a better spot for that. But the question came up as I've seen people that are just the doom they're the storm cloud that comes into every meeting and goes, oh, that'll fail for this, that'll fail for that. That's a Thompson Jenkins failure mechanism. You need to be aware of that. That'll explode. Like, what in the world are you talking about? And then nobody wants to invite them to the meeting because they just rain all over everybody's ideas and designs and don't offer any support or help or how do you fix this thing?
Well, that's the point.
Yeah.
That's the point is you have to, it's nothing wrong with saying, I see this failure mechanism coming, but there's everything right about here's what we can do about it.
Yeah, that's right. And by understanding it well enough, and I think it's part of the larger summary here is that a broad understanding across the organization, not just the reliability team, but across the organizations that failures happen because of initiating reasons and causes, both from decisions we make and from the material sets we're using and the processes we're using, the designs we're using. We have the opportunity to design out failures that's designed for reliability with that understanding. It's not just a failure analysis of field problems. That's not where mechanisms come into focus. That's to hindsight or, you know, looking in the rearview mirror kind of thing. But having permission to do it, I think, is critical. And adding a bit will understand it well enough somewhere in your organization. It doesn't have to be the reliability person, but you need to know who knows this metal phenomena and what are the opportunities to make corrections for that. Let's get it into guidelines. Let's get it into the discussion. Let's get it into the reviews where it's open to be talked about. I think
and,
that's
and we
the
don't
critical
want
part.
To come across that this is only mechanical because it can be mechanical and electrical, of course, and there's an interaction with software. And I just want to mention that this is not entirely a hardware discussion because although hardware has the well-known mechanisms of failure, if your software doesn't detect or isn't able to see what's happening and make adjustments, then there's an interaction there. So even if you're a software engineer, it helps you to know what those underlying mechanisms are so your software can determine when and predict when certain bad things are going to happen and make adjustments for safety and adjustments for performance.
Yeah. Well, don't let the software folks off the hook here. They've got plenty of their own failure mechanisms. There's a list for them too.
No one's off the hook.
No one's off the hook here. All right. You know, so maybe as a seed for some future discussions or webinars is, you know, what's your favorite failure mechanism? What's the most exotic one? I'm sure I've asked this question before and we've gotten a few comments and ideas, but, you know, or more to the point of this article, of this discussion is, you know, what's the right level of understanding your failure mechanisms and who and how well do they need to know it? Make sense for your organization. You know, do you have some hints or tips or stuff like that? Let us know. Head over to sendoreliability.com/go/SOR and you can leave us a voice message or you can leave us a written message or you can find Carl or I or the other hosts on LinkedIn or on our about pages. There's plenty of ways for you to join the conversation. So I'm just motivated now to go break something.
And then learn why and how it broke.
Well, I might get to that. Yeah. Too. Although I do have a screen on my desk right now that's not powering up. So I suspect there's besides the cable not being connected to it right now, there's probably another reason it's doing that. So
I'll just share this with you, Fred. I have a section of my work area in our Michigan home that is devoted to things that have broken. And normally I would throw them away, but they're there for the grandkids to take apart and see if they can figure out why they broke.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Oh, that's, I got to come up there. Next time you're back up in Michigan, I'm going to plan a trip just to go tinker in your playground.
Exactly. It's a lot of fun. Well, nice chatting with you on this, Fred.
Yeah, same, Carl. We'll talk to you soon. Have a great rest of your day.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation if you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show. Please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.